Welcome to Your Next Level Now with your host, Bob Donnell. As a human behaviorist, Bob has helped people from every walk of life reach their next level, both personally and professionally. Whether a celebrity, professional athlete, or entrepreneur, Bob has helped them align their behavior with their desired result in their life and career. This is Your Next Level Now with Bob Donnell.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Your Next Level Now. I've got somebody to introduce you to that, let's just put it this way. This is somebody who, and I'm saying this with Flo online so she knows, this is a woman who's captured my heart. And I know Flo is going to feel the same way. That's why I'm so safe in saying it. But I met Jessica Radetzky from Eric Swanson. Many of you guys know him. Amazing human being, amazing entrepreneur, philanthropist. I mean, just an all-around great guy. And he's had me on his stage several times. And one time I was on a stage and Jessica was also on the same stage. And I remember looking at her and listening to her speak and share and think, that's someone that would serve anyone well to emulate. And so I fell in love with her heart. I fell in love with her story. And more than anything else, I fell in love with who the woman is. This lady has been on Broadway. Guys, I mean, how many people want to be on Broadway? How many people, desire to be on Broadway at some point? And to be on it for many, many years on Broadway, mind-boggling. The discipline, the commitment that it takes to be that. But then to take that platform and use it for something so much bigger than Broadway, but to change people's lives. And so, Jessica, welcome to the show.
Oh, Bob, my goodness. What an incredible, incredible introduction. Thank you so much. The feeling is completely mutual. I had the great, great pleasure of hearing you speak and being on shows with you through Eric as well. Mm-hmm. And the feeling is totally mutual. You are incredibly inspiring human. And I'm so pleased to be on your show. I'm honored. So thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being here. Jessica, I mean, I already alluded to, but people want to be on Broadway and people grow up being, I want to be on Broadway. What does it take to get on Broadway? And then what does it take to stay on Broadway? Because you were on Broadway for how many years?
Almost 21.
21 years.
Yeah. I got really lucky. Yes.
Yeah. And people are alluding to be there and you're staying there for 21 years. That's crazy.
I got really lucky. I actually came to my job in a very roundabout way. I was at, my dream of my life was to be in a ballet company. And so I, studied from the age of 5, just tunnel vision, in classical ballet. And so Broadway was never even a thought in my brain. I loved musicals. My family loved musicals. My dad had every musical on record and I would listen obsessively to them and know every word. But it wasn't in my thought, at all to be in a musical. And so ballet was just totally what I did. And my parents would drive my little brother and I, who was also a dancer, an hour and a half each way for our classes. And so it was just a very serious commitment. And
at that age, they were that committed to
driving
him an hour and a half each way.
Oh, yes. We were. Yeah. Well, my teacher moved when we were eight, when I was eight. So from eight years old on, they drove us that distance. I mean, really very committed. And my folks were so unbelievably supportive with all of us, my two brothers and I, in whatever our passion was to support that dream. So, that was, when I think back on it now, I think, my goodness, what a, huge sacrifice for them to make that happen for us. But when I studied my whole life and my whole young life, in ballet school, and then when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I had a really bad injury. I tore my Achilles tendon, and a ballet company sort of wasn't in the cards for me at all. My injury was such that I wouldn't be able to sort of do that vigorous of a rehearsal load or performance load of what a ballet company would require of me. And I thought it was over. I thought my career was over. And so I did a couple of gigs. I did a job with an opera company, which was wonderful. I did a Nutcracker, which was wonderful, you know, sort of just to do something. This was after being off for almost 4 years, rehabbing. Yeah, it was a really bad injury. And then a friend of mine said, you should audition for the Phantom of the Opera. You would know exactly what you were doing. There's no, you know, surprises in the show. The choreography is set. So you wouldn't have to, you know, have an extra sort of stress on your Achilles, and you would, you know, be able to strengthen for what you have to do in the show. And so I did. I auditioned 5 times over 2 years. And every time I auditioned, I sort of got a different response from the creative team. The first time they said, you're much too tall. And then the second time they said, oh, we really like you. It's like, okay, that was a different, totally different response. Yeah. The third time they said, we're not looking for anyone. The fourth time they offered me the tour.
Now what's the tour?
Sorry?
What's the tour?
So the tour they had at that time in the sort of Broadway world, they had these amazing tours where it would be a full production tour where they would go out, big Broadway shows would go out for, you know, years at a time, but they would sit down in major cities for like 3-4 months at a time.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah. Those tours don't really exist anymore. Unfortunately, times have changed in that they producers don't want to do those kinds of tours anymore, but so they're much shorter and not quite so extravagant. But at that time, that tour was happening. And so, yeah, they would sit down in these major cities and do these really beautiful, you know, in beautiful houses and have these really long, luxurious stays. But it was, I got offered that job the day after 9/11. And I was like, there's no way I can do that. You know, I was actually working in LA at the time, doing a job with an opera company, dancing. And, you know, I couldn't get in touch with my family that was here. I couldn't, it was like, it was just impossible. So I turned that down, which was like, I didn't know it. I didn't want to turn it down, but I turned it down.
Now this is like an opportunity of once in a lifetime to maybe get, and you had to turn it down. Where did the priorities come for you from the way you were raised or from input from other people? Counsel, maybe somebody said, maybe you need to think about, where did that come from to put that priority so high?
Well, I've always been very, I have been very fortunate that I've grown up in a very tight-knit family, a very close-knit family. And my greatest influences, my greatest mentors have always been my parents. And I was lucky enough at that time to have my parents actually in Los Angeles with me. They had come down to actually see me perform and the day before. And so they were actually with me when I got that call. And I, you know, asked if I could call them back, obviously, and I had a conversation with them, and it was, it was just too much, and to have that support behind me saying it's okay to say no, and I really wanted to, also, I really wanted to hold out for the Broadway company, and that was sort of it was a bit of a toss up because, you know, you don't know if you're going to get offered the Broadway company, but if they liked me enough for the tour, I felt like maybe. So it was a multiple sort of decision, multiple things were included in the decision, but you know, the woman who was in charge of hiring at that point, when I said I wasn't going to take the job, and I said, but I'd really love to work in the Broadway company, she said, well, you know, the only way into the Broadway company is through the tour. And I was like, tears. But then, you know,
no pressure.
No pressure, right. So then 3 months later, they had another audition in the city, and I went. Every fiber of my being did not want to go because I kind of knew I wasn't going to get a great reaction, and I didn't. You know, they called me out in front of 200 other auditioners and said, you know, we offered you this job, blah, blah, blah. You turned it down. And then a couple months later, they called me and offered it to me for the Broadway company. So it was kind of me just like knocking down the door, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that... talk about a double whammy to, you know, kind of get a rejection through a back, you know, it's just amazing the rigorousness of the industry, the rigorousness of what you had to go through from age five growing up and getting to that point, and then to turn it down on your standards, and then to have them come back with this whole back, but then the door opens. Was there ever a time when you thought this just isn't meant for me? I mean, most people go, oh, it's a sign. It's a sign that God doesn't want me to do this. It's a sign. Did it ever cross your mind that it was a sign?
I mean, yes and no. I, you know, those kinds of things are, I sort of look at those kinds of things loosely because I'm not a religious person, and I've not really put much weight in those things in my life. And so, you know, I've auditioned for so many things in my life. As a performer, you audition constantly. And so, you know, rejection is something that you deal with on a oftentimes weekly basis, you know, and it's not fun at all, you know, so you have to sort of build up.
That's something you wake up looking forward to, huh?
Yeah, you have to really build up a sort of a protocol for yourself of how to get through something like that, you know, and you have to be, you know, you have to be a performer in all of the performing arts, anything that requires a subjective, you know, someone judging you, really, you have to find a way to sort of distance yourself from that. Otherwise, you know, and you have to want it so much that you cannot do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, why would you put yourself through that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've all heard the idea of rejection is redirection, right? It's just a redirection. That's easier said than done.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's easier said than done.
I love it when somebody comes up with these little cliches and these little, you know, things that just sound so pithy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apply them, then talk.
Yeah, right.
You've had to do the work to apply them and to do the work to be who you are today. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past with price paid. You've paid a price to be who you are and what you are today.
Right.
Let's talk about one of those prices, because your amazing relationship with your dad. Man, I remember that night when we were talking and I was just crying. We're doing a Zoom call with an audience and I'm crying.
Yeah, because both of
I'm
us.
Just thinking, we're both crying. But, you know, what did that relationship with your dad mean to you?
Oh my gosh, Bob. So my dad, was, you know, one of the, I find it so difficult. I find it the most amazing thing to talk about my dad, and also the most difficult thing to talk about my dad, because there are, you know, there's never an adequate word to describe my dad. There's never an adequate phrase to describe how incredible he was.
You know, I want to stop for a second. One of the things I loved about what I know about your relationship with your dad because of our conversations is it it's like an onion. It has so many layers to it. It's not just this one. He was a great guy. Yeah. He was a great father. There's so many layers to this relationship. Yeah. I think that's the beauty of it. So please continue.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. He, you know, he was this, first of all, just this, both of my parents, just these teach by example human beings, which is like, what an incredible gift to have in a person's life, right? So, and still continue to this day, my mom daily is a gift of like, you know, someone that I want to emulate, and I learn from her all the time. My dad, you know, this was such a connection with you from our last conversation, but my dad was someone who was consistently curious his entire life, was consistently interested his entire life, and listened with an attention that was, you know, something I'd never seen before and never saw again, to be honest with you. Like, he just was so interested in what you had to say, what everyone had to say. And, you know, that is something that is lost, to be perfectly honest. Like, people don't do that. People are like, you know, on there. It's just, it's an incredible thing to see. And, you know, I have friends and I have family that still say to me to this day, like, your dad was so amazing. Like, he actually, it all actually felt like he saw me. Like, it actually felt like he was really interested in me. Like, there was nobody that ever looked at me and like actually heard things that I said the way that your dad did. Like, you know, I lost my dad 15 years ago and people still say that to me, you know? I mean, it feels like yesterday. I'm sure you understand that feeling of that loss.
You know what the amazing thing about what you're sharing though, Jessica, is that, you know, I think, and I know, you know, we've both been around a lot of celebrities and things like that. And the celebrities may be one thing to some people, and then they're a different thing to their family, right? The fact that he made you feel seen and heard and loved and respected transcends how he made everybody else feel, how he made the audience feel or the friends, yeah, or the, but his family.
Yeah.
For you to have taken that and gone, he was the one person that I've never met anyone that did that for me and for other people so reliably.
Yeah.
I think that's
genuinely. It wasn't something that he ever, it wasn't something that he, that was something that he put on. It was something that was just innate within him and that he truly embodied. Like, it was something that he enjoyed, you know, and the curiosity and the sort of flow of his life was such a it was so beautiful, so, and such an inspiration to me as in my own life, because he, my mom too, like the way she has, how her life has gone. So like my dad was a writer, a beautiful, beautiful writer. He could make you understand, he can make anyone understand anything. You know, he, in his life, he became a science writer, but he wanted to be a novelist and he wrote a wonderful novel, but it didn't do what he wanted it to do. So he became a science writer, and he could make anyone understand the most complex scientific thoughts. And he wrote a dozen books on, you know, scientific subjects, from viruses to the brain, to sports medicine, to, you know, a bunch of different things. And then he went on to curate museum exhibits. But in his life, he went where his heart took him. it was, he always wrote. It was always, you know, based around him writing, but, you know, he moved, his curiosity never waned, and he just moved where his interest took him, and he created work for himself and really, and did well. And that was such a huge lesson for me as a person, that I didn't have to be, you know, for me, not being in a ballet company was devastating. It was what my dream was. It was what my identity was, you know, and I didn't know who was I if that wasn't what I did. And so when the, you know, Broadway was like, what? That's not what I do, you know? And then to see him and my mom, you know, my mom did the same thing. She was a potter, then she was a teacher, then she started a dancewear company, like all these different things, but always artistic, you know, always something that was creative and beautiful and made something out of nothing, you know, and to see them do that with their own lives, I thought, oh, I can do that with my life, you know, and so I did. And so when, you know, the job on Broadway came up, I pivoted, and that was something that was like, okay, I can do that. That's it. Nothing will define me. If I see this in front of me and nothing defines them, then that nothing defines me. And that has opened my own brain and my own heart to the rest of my life and to everything I've done for the rest of my life.
So what do you say to the person right now who's like, I'm in a redirection of my life. I'm in a pivot of my life. I've worked a lot with police officers, law enforcement, first responders. I've worked with military. I've worked with celebrities. I've worked with professional athletes. You know, professional athlete, they got a 15, 10, 12 year career. And then all of a sudden, what? Well, all of a sudden, nobody's asking for their autographs. They're not asking for to be on television commercials and stuff like that. Or, you know, some of them are, but most aren't. What do you say to those people that are like, hey, my whole identity was X, and now I'm trying to find myself again or figure out who the heck I really am, because that wasn't who I was. That's what I did. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that person now? I mean, it might be a stay-at-home mom that now they're back out in the workforce because of demands of economics or whatever. What do you say to them?
I mean, I think it's just a matter of opening up your heart to see what else interests you. You know, to see what else sort of gives you that little spark, and then explore it. And if it's not that, it's something else. If it's not that, it's something else. But it, you know, I feel like there are so many different avenues we can take. You know, there's so many different things, volunteer, or, you know, just see what other people are doing, and what, you know, read a book and see if that, you know, spark something within you, but just veer off a little bit off the path that you're normally doing every day.
You know, the thing that interests me over your career on Broadway, okay, just your career on Broadway, how many different influences you had, how many different people that were directing you, telling you to do this, and it changed from maybe from time to time, season to season, because of different people coming in. And yet you had to adapt to different styles of producers, productions, those kinds. How did you adapt?
I mean, I think that it's just a matter of sort of, I think this goes back to my mom, honestly. she has the sort of ability to be very generous in her. She's just a very sort of effusive, generous person. She just sort of opens her heart to people. She talks to everyone. She, you know, will sort of, if we're in a place, we'll know a bunch of people by the time we leave. I'm not like that. You know, I'm much more reserved. I'm much more shy. If I go to a function, I will probably be sort of standing off to the side. So I have always tried to sort of take a little bit of what she has and emulate that a little bit. So, you know, everyone's role in, you know, in a theater, we'll have upwards of 100 people working side by side, and we're all, every single person is doing, you know, the best that they can do in the job that they have, you know, but we all come from very different backgrounds. We all come from very, you know, different work ethics, different, you know, ways of, you know, actors and performers tend to be, you know, much more sort of outgoing and, you know, that's just sort of the way that, that we are because of performing. And then, you know, other sections of the theater are a little bit more reserved, and so you just have to be respectful of everyone, you know, but you have to know that consciously going in, I think.
You know, when you think of a production like Phantom of the Opera, I mean, come on, that's, it doesn't get much bigger than that. When you think of that, there were people that probably stood out, the stars, maybe Michael Crawford or, you know, whoever, these like, and you look at them and you go, wow, what made them stand out versus every other Phantom? The good ones, the bad. And when I'm not asking you to dish on the bad ones, but let's highlight the good ones. What stood out to you about the several different Phantoms that you were able to witness?
Do you mean like working with them or their performances?
Yeah. Working with them.
Well, that's a no. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. So my very favorite Phantom I ever worked with, could get me in trouble, but he's like one of my best friends, is Howard McGillin, and he has the record for the longest running Phantom, I believe. Wow. But he's beautiful. Oh my goodness, such a beautiful performer, but also just a incredible, incredible human being. Just as kind as can be and gentle and, you know, a very subtle demeanor, very calm, very just a gentle human. And that's what he brought to work every day.
Wow.
You know, and the role of the Phantom is very isolated from the rest of the company, because he's on stage really with one person, and then he's in his dressing room, you know, so you have to sort of make an effort to be part of the company if you're that role. And, you know, there's some that do that and some that don't do that. And Howard is really beautiful. We've had a bunch of really beautiful actors coming through. It was a pretty good group on a whole.
Yeah, I'd say it was a pretty good run, huh?
Yeah, I know. The show ran for almost 36 years.
36 years. On Broadway.
On Broadway.
Holy cow. Wow.
I think it'll be back probably with a smaller cast and a smaller orchestra and a little bit of a different production probably in a year or something. It won't be the original.
Would you ever go back?
Me? Oh, I don't think they'd have me back, honestly. I think they'll have like a whole different group in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm disappointed from the standpoint that I've never seen the play, Phantom of the Opera. And I would have loved to have seen it with you.
I wish.
But maybe I'll be able to see it with you and we can sit side by side in the audience at some point.
I would love that.
I would love to do that and get some insight on that. You've got such a heart. I remember hearing the story about your nonprofit, your 501c3, and how you helped kids that were in hospitals experience Broadway by some of them being able to come through and then there was a time where you couldn't get as many of them there as you wanted to. And so you started taking a group of people, performers, to the hospitals, to kids. Tell us about what happened, why that became such a big deal to you. Why did it become such a big deal to your heart?
Yeah, thank you. So so the impetus for Broadway Hearts was, well, I knew that I wanted to start some sort of foundation in honor of my dad. Mm-hmm. So that was a biggie. That was always in my head. I thought it might be a genetic cancer foundation or a pancreatic cancer foundation. I have a gene that predisposes me to a bunch of different cancers, which I inherited from my dad. And so I had done a bunch of outreach for that. And I thought, well, maybe I'll do that. It's a pretty saturated field. So I thought, well, and it was also a little bit too raw for me. So I always had that in my head that perhaps that could be something that would, I don't know. I wasn't amazing with dealing with grief. I'll say it wasn't my best thing. And I hoped that perhaps having some sort of channel to maybe put some of my grief would be a foundation or something like that. I didn't know, but I thought maybe that would be a good experiment. So at the show at Phantom, we would have Make-A-Wish kids that would come see the show a lot. And we would have the option, it was all volunteer, to stay after and talk to them and sign stuff, take pictures, take them on a backstage tour, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Those kids were amazing and their families mm-hmm. were amazing, and hearing their stories, and I looked forward to meeting them whenever they would come. And us being such a big show, we would get a lot of those kids in. You know, oftentimes they would cancel at the last minute for whatever reason. Now having my own foundation and having a similar sort of wish program, I know that oftentimes it has nothing to do with illness why these kids can't come at the last minute. It can be travel, it can be something else. At that time, I didn't know that. So my heart and my head just went to the very worst case scenario. And so I was like fixated on this idea of, oh, I have to figure out a way to bring a version of us to kids in treatment, so that we take the burden off of them to come see us. And so I just started, you know, calling hospitals in the local New York City area and asking if I could bring some Broadway performers to come visit with the kids. And it actually took a really long time to get us into the hospitals. I know they have
something good.
I know they have to be careful, but I was like, come on. So it took about 6 months from like start from the first phone call to getting into the first hospital. And there were about six or seven of us. And we went in and we were just in a little playroom with some kids and their parents and some child life specialists. And, you know, I had printed up like 7 or 8 of the most popular, you know, songs, Broadway songs and Disney songs. And then we took some requests. I think one kid requested the national anthem. We're like, really? Why not? You know, a lot of Disney requests. We had a request for, there were some really funny requests, I remember, but it was wonderful. It was so wonderful. And so we just started adding on hospitals and adding on visits. And then I reached out to friends across the Broadway community. And so then all these different, you know, we started with like 8 volunteers just from Phantom. And then all of a sudden I had like, you know, 60 volunteers from all across the different Broadway shows. So it multiplied really fast and people got involved. And then the pandemic happened. And we, you know, weren't allowed into any hospitals, obviously, which was such a heartbreak. But there was a tiny
redirect, right? Again, I'm here. You're doing the thing that you're passionate about. That you've taken this idea, you've taken it to concept, to reality, and then that happens.
Yeah.
What did you do then?
So we were fortunate enough that we just took everything online as the world went online, right? The whole world went online, which is that tiny silver lining of the pandemic, was that we sort of all became very adept at the mm-hmm. online platforms. And we were able to, at that point, we were just visiting local hospitals because we were doing stuff in person, and Ronald McDonald Houses as well, which is really special. And then we, you know, my ultimate goal with Broadway Hearts is to make it global. You know, I'd love to be in every hospital and every children's hospital, you know, all across the world. But first, of course, it was going to be across the country, because we have members and tours, you know, that would visit hospitals when they were in that town or that city. But I was hoping to have actual chapters sort of sitting down in different major cities. That was pretty far in the future, because, you know, I'm still the one person doing everything in the foundation, even though I have a board and everything, but I'm sort of the person that does the day-to-day stuff. So, but we took everything online, and we were able to now, you know, beam ourselves into children's mm-hmm. hospitals all over the country, which was like, what is happening? This is incredible. And so now we're in, you know, 20 children's hospitals all over the nation. And we have visits, multiple visits a week, which is like, blows my mind still.
What are some of the comments that you hear from the performers that go and do this? What are they coming away with?
Well, you know, it puts life into perspective in about 1 second, you know, to see these unbelievable kids from, you know, from tiny babies up to age 21, you know, that's the age range that we have in these hospitals. And so, you know, you see kids dealing with all kinds of illnesses, but mostly we do have, you know, blood diseases or cancers. And, you know, they are incredibly present with us, and just beautiful and so game for, you know, what we have to bring. And so it's a very emotional experience. You know, we will oftentimes leave the hospital and, you know, have a little bit of a emotional experience, but most of the time it's a very inspiring, you know, moment that we have with them. Most of the comments that I get are just people feel very grateful to be allowed into, you know, these kids' lives, which is exactly what I feel as well. You know
what I love about that part of it is that you did this to help the children, and yet what you did was you helped many of the performers get in touch with their own lives and get in touch with who they really want to be and how they can live their life moving forward, whether they're on Broadway or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think I want to thank you for that gift that you're giving to the performers. I know it's set out for the kids, but I just see this magnifying going all over the world because of what you've been willing to do. And I say willing to do because I know it was a calling. I know it was something that you really didn't feel like you had an option, because this is who you are. And yet at the same time, that you were willing to do this even when it's uncomfortable, even when you have to ask for money, even when you're trying to, you know, make something happen that doesn't seem possible. I just want to tell you, thank you. Thank you for being who you are, what you do. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bob. That means a lot. I, you know, I feel really lucky that I have the people involved that I do, because my volunteers are, you know, they're so incredibly generous. Mm-hmm. They're just really generous humans. And, you know, and we have multiple programs. So it's not only that they show up on, you know, the Zoom calls and sing for the kids, but we have, you know, we have a program called Broadway Hearts Backstage, which is the sort of the Make-A-Wish, akin to the Make-A-Wish program. you know, where we send a child and their family to a Broadway show of their choice, and we have a partner restaurant, they have a meal beforehand, but then we have volunteers who are actually in the show, and, you know, they'll take them on a take them up on stage and, you know, let them meet the cast. And so we have, you know, they'll stay after and hang out with them and make it really, really special for them. So we, you know, the generosity is just astounding.
What an experience. I know a lot of adults that would just love to have one of those experiences, right?
Maybe. Yeah. Actually, one of our, I have to mention this, our very first recipient of our Broadway Hearts Backstage program, which was, I guess, about a year and a half ago, was when I first was able to sort of make the program come to life. This beautiful little girl named Savi, she was 8 at the time. Her mom just sent me a video of her taking her last round of chemo pill yesterday. I mean, doesn't that just give you goosebumps?
Yeah. And, you know, we would be remiss in mentioning our mutual friend of Frank Shankiewicz. I know he was a great mentor to you. And a great friend and mentor to me as well. You know, co-founder of Make-A-Wish Foundation. And here he is working with you and helping you with your organization. And he's since passed. But again, people like that, that just were willing to do things. I love the fact that you reached out to him, that you guys had a great relationship. So blessed.
Yeah, Frank was amazing. I mean, I told him about Broadway Hearts immediately when I met him, because I was shocked that I met him to begin with, that he was like standing right in front of me. I didn't know who he was, first of all. And then when I met him, I was just like, what? How is this? Like, this is the reason that I created this nonprofit, like, what is happening? And and then I told him about it, and he was like, oh, I want to be involved in that. I was like, yeah, it was incredible, absolutely incredible. And then if I tell you, it was like anything, I could just text him or call him, and, you know, and at first he wasn't on my board. He was just sort of an advisory person to me, a mentor to me. And then he was like, why am I not on your board? I was like, are you serious? Yeah. I mean, I couldn't, it was, it was beyond.
Yeah. That is so cool.
I know.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I want to open it up for a few questions. So guys, if you have a question, let me know, raise your hand, whatever, so that we can get you called on. You know, Broadway Hearts, I had no knowledge about it until we had that conversation with Eric, and I was like, what is this? I am so blown away by your heart to do something like that, and I just know that there's a lot of people that are going to be blessed, like, beyond measure, because of who you are and what you're doing. So, Alana, go ahead, come on and ask a question or make a comment. This is Alana. She's a relatively new member of the family. Amazing heart, loves doing a lot of things for sober living, for all kinds of different organizations. Just a great woman. So,
hi, Alana.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you so much. You sharing the stories with your father just so touched me. Very similarities with my dad, and I could tell your heart like Bob does. I might have missed it, but what hospital or hospitals are you mainly going into?
Fortunately, we're in many hospitals all over the country. We're in most of the hospitals here in New York, Mount Sinai, NYU Hassenfeld. We're in Presbyterian. we are in, I mean, we're all over the country, really. I can name them for you if you'd like.
No. That's
specific. Yeah. Are there specific ones you're thinking about?
Are they on your website where people can find
them?
Yes,
they're all listed on our website, broadwayhearts.org. Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine has been going in, and he's on their staff now at the Children's Hospital in LA or San Diego.
And there if you have connections.
Okay. He goes in, I met him through Unity Church as a singer, and he'll spend hours with a young child, and he comes back a week later and he's written a song using their words. And I'd be happy to send you his email and connect you guys for whatever. But again, similar type heart, and it touches me so much, because I used to go in with a friend to senior communities, and especially at Christmas, we sing Christmas carols. Well, I have a bad voice for singing, but they had bad hearing, and they knew all the words better than we did. So we would have these fabulous sing-alongs at Christmas time with these elders. And it brings as much joy to them, because a lot of them they're in senior care often because of memory. Well, they're going back into their childhood singing all these songs. So it just, I love what you're doing. And yes, I'll get Carl's information to you if you can get connections for each other.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
Thanks, Alana.
Let's see, Flo. Yeah. Go ahead, Flo.
Oh my gosh. This was so great. Thanks so much.
Great or what?
Yes. And I did get to see a little portion of when you and Bob were talking. So yes, I can see why I just love listening, and I was taking some notes, and I did see when Phantom of the Opera was on tour years ago. It was great. So I was like, oh yeah, they don't do that anymore. But what would you say your favorite part of what you do is?
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I can whittle that down. I have a few favorite parts. I mean, it's definitely the reactions of the kids. I think that would probably be first and foremost. You know, we have a few different programs that we do with the kids, and you know, the excitement of the kids, and just knowing that, like, that's a moment in their day that they're not thinking about what they're going through, that they're just having fun, and they're laughing, and they're singing, and they're, you know, they're not thinking about what's happening. So that's probably first and foremost. Second, you know, is just sort of trying to, I think, propel us forward and trying to create new programs and, you know, hook up with more hospital partners. And, you know, I'm always trying to figure out what we can do next and how we can be more of service to these kids and do more. So it's always, there's always a drive behind it that makes me feel really good.
Well, thank you for sharing today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Flo. It's so lovely to meet you.
Yes. Great to meet you too.
Michelle is often in her car when she's doing this. So I'm not sure if she can come on or not.
Yeah, she's she's a fly on the wall.
Okay. So let's wrap this up with this. If you could only do Broadway Hearts, or you could be on Phantom of the Opera or any other Broadway show for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I think I know the answer, but which one would it be?
I would definitely do Broadway Hearts. I mean, you know, I would need an angel investor to do Broadway Hearts forever, because I don't make a dime from it, you know. So I would need for someone to support me. So that's the only sort of little bug with that. But yeah, definitely. And for now, you know, I definitely feel that I love performing. Oh my goodness, I love performing so much. And I would love to continue to perform in some way, but I don't ever want to not do Broadway heart. You know, I didn't know that I had this passion before I started it. And it very quickly became something that I just never wanted to be without. And it quickly became something that I would go to sleep and wake up thinking about. I feel very, very fortunate to have it in my life.
So that's a perfect bring around to how do you support this passion of yours, this purpose of yours, this direction that you know is lifelong. You know, now that you're off of Broadway, what do you do next? How do you raise this money? How do you get awareness? But then how do you ask people for money? I think, you know, I ran a nonprofit that I founded when I was 19. And the hardest thing was to say, I need money, please donate. And I found some great people that did that for me. They said, Bob needs money. Here's what he's doing. He needs money. Please donate.
Yeah.
What do you need? How can people contribute to be a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to find someone to do that for me like you did. I definitely know what my limitations are. And I've managed to do sort of wear all the hats to a certain degree, but I definitely know what my limitations are. So I would love to bring some people on board to really take care of the things that I'm not good at. So I would love to find those folks. And then any collaborations would be awesome. You know, I'm open to all things. For sure.
So somebody's watching this live or recorded. What's the first place they need to go to get more information about Broadway Hearts and or make a donation? And how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Broadwayhearts.org has all information. You can also find us on Instagram, Broadway Hearts, Facebook, Broadway Hearts, and all roads lead to me. So if you email, if you text, whatever, it all comes to me. All roads lead to me. So yeah.
That's a blessing and a curse, I'm sure.
it's just fine. I'm so happy to speak with everyone. Yeah.
Jessica, I love you and I see you and I appreciate who you are, how you live your life, how you give perspective to others that have a different viewpoint at this point in life. They maybe haven't gone through some of the things you have. And I told you this before, I just want to say a big, huge thank you to your mom and dad for raising a person who has the ability to see others. Your dad's ability to do that, your mom's ability to do that are just a blessing for all of us. And they go way beyond their lifetimes. And so that's true legacy. And I just want to honor them and tell them thank you.
Thank you for saying that. That's, they are... I got so lucky. I got so incredibly lucky, and I know that. I know that. But also, Bob, the gift that you give to people in the words that you say to people and coming from your heart and that you see people and the way that you listen to people and the way that you... the love that you give to people is something that doesn't happen anymore. And it's something that is really so valuable and so rare. And it's really special. So I'm so happy to know you and thank you so much for having me on. And your words are just so beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. I received that from you and I greatly appreciate that. Appreciate that very much. So guys, take this this inspiration, take this feeling of love and giving to others, take this and use it for your own life, for your betterment and the betterment of those people around you. And with that, guys, get out there, make it a great week, and enjoy your next level.
Thanks so much, Jessica and Bob.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Your Next Level Now with Bob Donnell. To find out more, call us at 949-542-6398. That's 949-542-6398. Or you can find more information on our website at everythingnextlevel.com. That's everythingnextlevel.com.